Nicolet Bank is honored to support all who strive to make communities great.
Newsmakers is a production of Wisconsin Eye. To keep programs like this free and accessible to all, please consider a charitable gift to wisi.org/donate or text WISI to 44321. This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. Democrats from across the country and Wisconsin are heading to Chicago for the Democratic National Convention, which runs Monday through Thursday. Democrats are riding high in enthusiasm for their new nominee, Vice President Kamala Harris. But can that energy sustain? We are talking with two veteran journalists who were recently covering the Republican National Convention. They're sharing their perspectives with us today. Andrew Ball, who's a state government and politics reporter from the Capital Times, and Adam Kelnoffer, who's a state government reporter with the Wisconsin State Journal. Thank you both for joining us.
Yeah, of course.
So I have to start with your reflections on the Republican National Convention. It was just a few weeks ago, but it seems like forever ago. What's your favorite memory from covering that event?
I know. The news cycle now seems like 100 things happen in a week, but that was last month. Somewhat wild to think about. I would say it was just the surreal nature of having it in Milwaukee and in Wisconsin, probably even more so for Adam, a longer tenured Wisconsinite than I am. But to walk around Milwaukee, you know, where I'd been before, to walk around Fiserv Forum and see it just be taken over by a political convention, it really drives home the importance of Wisconsin in November and, you know, how it really at the moment is just the center of the political universe.
Did you have a favorite takeaway from your coverage there?
What Andrew said was definitely an interesting thing that I saw. I was in Milwaukee for the DNC in 2020 during the pandemic, and they had, you know, all the barriers set up and everything, but it kind of seemed a little bit like a ghost convention versus the 2024 RNC was very much similar convention boundaries and everything, but there were actually people there. So that was very, very interesting to kind of see that contrast and everything, and going to my first like actual in-person convention that wasn't during the pandemic. But one of the more interesting things for me was being able to talk with a lot of the Wisconsin delegates and get their perspectives on you know, how they're feeling at the convention, how they're feeling about Trump and Vance, and how they're feeling going into November for the general election.
There was a lot of energy at that convention. I know that President Trump had just survived an assassination attempt. Can you describe what the atmosphere felt like there?
Yeah, well, we'll talk, I imagine, about the enthusiasm on the Democratic side. I think they're at a similar place where Republicans were entering the RNC, which is they really felt like the momentum was on their side. President Biden was, you know, in a downward spiral in the polls. There were all these rumblings about the future of, you know, his fate on the ticket, the assassination attempt. It just all, you know, from talking to people, they were supremely confident they were going to win in November. And then the switcheroo at the top of the ticket, and, you know, it's a sign of how quickly things can change, because now I think the shoe is a little bit on the other foot. And if you talk to a lot of Democrats who are going to go to Chicago, they think, well, you know, now we have that energy kind of at our backs. And Republicans, I think, you know, if you ask them publicly, they say, oh, yeah, we're going to win. But you know, I think there are more questions now than maybe there were a month ago at the RNC.
Yeah, Democrats do seem to be running on the similar type of enthusiasm. How would you describe these last several weeks for Democrats?
It's been, you know, at the RNC, we saw a message of unity, but when Trump announced Vance as a VP pick, and we're kind of seeing a lot of the same unity message. Democrats aren't saying the word unity so much as Republicans were, but you're definitely seeing a lot of kind of coalitions of smaller sects of Democrats kind of unify behind Harris way more than they were so behind President Joe Biden. So
we're still 80 days out from the election. Do you think Democrats can sustain that level of enthusiasm?
That would be the question. And I mean, you know, there's this idea typically of a party getting a bump after their convention. You know, I think there are a lot of questions as, you know, did the vice president get her bump before the convention.
And is that as big as it's going to get?
Right. You know, I think we're obviously in unprecedented times, and we've never had a situation like this before. I think the big question will be, you know, some of the voters that she really needed to win over, voters of color, younger voters who maybe are coming back into the fold, will that last? Because, you know, she hasn't necessarily, you know, she's starting to talk policy now, and I think that will really kind of determine the course of where things head over the next month or so.
Do you think Democrats are peaking too early when you look at the timeline?
It's hard to say. I don't know. There is a lot of enthusiasm right now, and it's hard to see how such a high level of enthusiasm can carry through for, you know, like 80, 90 days or so until the November election. But they are doing a lot of events in those battleground states where they really, really need to focus on. So they're definitely trying to keep that enthusiasm level up, but it'll be very interesting to see kind of how Harris deals with some of the barriers for her that are likely to come up in the near future, some policy issues, like Andrew was saying, like winning over voters of color. I think there might be some smaller issues with the law and order tactic that they're taking, drawing on Harris's experience as a prosecutor and attorney general, you know, 4 years after the nation was kind of engulfed in this, the George Floyd protest, the Black Lives Matter movement, the movement to kind of reallocate or defund police resources. So I think she'll have to talk a lot about that.
A lot of this will pan out after the convention, and
right.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what we can expect at the actual convention. What do we know about what's on the agenda?
Yeah, so it'll be a little bit different. Democrats claimed they needed to do a virtual roll call to formally give the Harris-Walz ticket the nomination beforehand.
So they've technically already been nominated. Yeah,
they don't even have to go to Chicago if they don't want to. I suspect they do, though. Yeah. So that'll change it a bit. I think they'll have a ceremonial roll call. But really, I imagine there's been a significant reorganization of the speaker schedule in light of this enthusiasm, in light of the, you know, what the ticket looks like, introducing folks to the vice president and her vice president, Tim Walz. You know, I mean, that's a big part of what the conventions are. It's, you know, a 4-day long PR campaign, and, you know, it's free airtime for your message.
Are there parts of the agenda that you're looking at?
I mean, it's a lot of the agenda hasn't been released yet, so it's hard to say exactly.
We heard about some of the potential speakers, former presidents.
For sure. Barack Obama is definitely one that I'll be watching. A few of the Wisconsin delegates that I've talked to leading up to the convention to try and get a feel for what they're thinking going into this have likened this Harris campaign to Barack Obama in 2008. So I'd really be looking at kind of how the two campaigns might be similar or different. And, you know, Obama won in 2008, and that was a landmark victory for Democrats, you know, the first black president of the United States. So that was a major move, and it'll be very interesting, you know, if they can kind of carry that same enthusiasm with the first, or what would be the first black woman president. So I'll be watching Barack Obama for sure.
Barack Obama for sure. I think, was that Tuesday night?
I believe so.
That's Tuesday night.
Yeah.
But like you said, it's not really firm yet, so some things can change.
Yeah.
5,500 delegates, about 100 from Wisconsin. Can we expect to see any Wisconsinites on the stage? Are you hearing about that? Do you think that might happen?
So I believe we have been told that U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin will attend at least part of the convention, which puts her on a little bit different footing than some of her colleagues who are running in other swing states who have said, you know, I'm just going to skip the DNC. I'm going to focus on campaigning in my home state, you know, potentially worried about too strong a connection to the Biden administration and, you know, with that record.
But we don't know if she'll speak, though.
We
she'll
don't.
Be there.
But I suspect there will be some effort made to, you know, appeal to Wisconsinites. The RNC, J.D. Vance, it was not a coincidence. He name-checked Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin 3 or 4 times over the course of his address to the delegates. There will be small ways that, you know, they'll reference their neighbor to the north.
Pandering to Wisconsin.
Most certainly.
What about other Wisconsin? Will Governor Tony Evers make a profile there?
That's a good question. I I wouldn't be too surprised if he does. Like I said, we're not exactly entirely sure what the exact speaker list will be. I wouldn't be surprised if Baldwin shows up either, though, because we did see her jump behind Harris like almost immediately as soon as Harris got in the race and Joe Biden dropped out, which is a stark contrast to how she kind of was a little hesitant to get behind Joe Biden after his poor debate performance against Trump in June. So.
Is that a strength for her to be embracing the Harris-Walls ticket publicly like that?
That's hard for me to say because I'm not running her campaign or anything. but I, you know, considering the difference in enthusiasm from Democratic voters between Joe Biden and Harris, I think, yeah, it would be more of a boon for Baldwin to get behind Harris than it would have been if Biden was still running.
We learned last week that the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee is prioritizing the 3rd Congressional District and is going to be supporting Rebecca Cook in her race versus Republican Derek Van Orden. Do we expect that particular House race to maybe be showcased at convention or any other House or Senate races that might be critical to a Harris-Walz administration?
Yeah, I mean, there will be plenty of chatter because Democrats don't have to do a whole lot to take back the U.S. House. And, you know, we've seen already a point of emphasis not just on the 3rd Congressional District out in western Wisconsin, but the 1st as well in the southeastern part of the state. So, you know, those races, in addition to being important and taking back the House, it's also about getting enthusiasm for candidates up and down the ballot because those are two crucial areas for Tammy Baldwin and crucial areas for the Harris-Walz ticket as well. We might not see an explicit call out on the convention stage there, but there'll be plenty of messaging on the importance of those down ballot races.
Are there, you mentioned President Barack Obama. Are there other key speakers that you're looking forward to hearing from or that your readers are talking about?
I really want to, honestly, I just want to see Harris and Walz talk and see, you know, if they really focus on the battleground states like Wisconsin, because that's really where they need to pick up electoral college votes to win. And they, a lot of people have been saying they picked Tim Walz because of his Midwestern background to appeal to those Midwestern states where there are a lot of battleground states. So I'd be interested in how Walz and Harris kind of bring that Midwestern messaging and broaden it out to more than just Minnesota and kind of loop Wisconsinites in there.
I think Walz is on that tentative agenda for Wednesday night. It's his first chance to introduce himself to the American public. Is it a make or break moment for a vice presidential candidate like him?
It certainly will be a big deal, and it'll be a big deal in Wisconsin. You know, we're unique in that we have a pretty good chunk of the state that falls in the Minneapolis media market. So there are a lot of voters in the state who have some idea already of Tim Walz and what he's been up to in Minnesota. Democrats think that that could really cut their way. They had a big turnout at the rally in Eau Claire a week or two ago. I've also heard theories on the Republican side. Brian Schimming, who is chair of the Republican Party of Wisconsin, yesterday said, that's a good thing for us because people there have seen all the footage of, you know, laws passed in Minnesota.
Too progressive.
Yeah, of the theory that, you know, we don't want to look like Minnesota and Wisconsin. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how explicit he tries to kind of draw on his background from rural community, teacher, football coach, that sort of thing to, you know, maybe try and appeal to those similar kinds of communities in Wisconsin.
A tentative schedule lists President Biden as a key speaker on Monday night, the first night of the convention. What might we expect to hear from him?
I think he's going to talk a lot about passing that torch of protecting democracy that he kind of ran on back in 2020 to, you know, win the election. I think he's going to be talking about passing that torch to Harris and how, kind of explaining how this is more or less a rerun of the 2020 election. Obviously, we're seeing the same Republican candidate, so it'll be interesting how that message gets, or how that torch gets passed, and if there's any kind of changes or modifications in that kind of messaging.
A lot of people were shocked, of course, when President Biden stepped back from the campaign. How do you think the crowd will receive him?
You know, I think it'll be a very favorable reception because, you know, the idea is it took some amount of arm twisting to get to that point, but once he did, he was roundly praised by members of his party as a patriot. as, you know, a strong leader, a hero, and you know, regardless of what happens in November, that image will, I think, be what Democrats anyway will try and paint as his legacy, doing the selfless thing for the country to step aside.
Really, history making. It's never really happened in this way.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I think that. It's funny, in an alternate universe, he would get a much different reception were he accepting the nomination down in the polls, but it'll be a way for him, I think, to go out somewhat on top with his party.
His legacy, sure. Yeah. We talked about how Harris and Walz have already pretty much accepted, or have already been nominated, I should say, but there will be a more formal ceremonial nomination process at convention. Do we expect any hiccups with that? There were some people who thought that there should have been more of a discussion, right?
Yeah. I don't know if I'm necessarily, I haven't heard any actual words said that there will be hiccups there, but I wouldn't be too surprised considering a lot of the roadblocks that Joe Biden faced when he was in the race and Harris belonging to the same White House administration. Because a lot of the criticisms that Joe Biden took were on the Israel-Hamas war, and Kamala Harris is part of that same administration. So I wouldn't be too surprised if there might be some protest votes there, but I would be very surprised if Harris didn't actually get enough votes to get the nomination.
Well, and the overwhelming majority of Wisconsin's delegates, I believe, already voted for the vice president. I think there was one or two who were uncertain, but, you know, I think Wisconsin's indicative of where most states are.
Certainly,
unity is their theme, it seems like.
Yeah. But we did also see in the primary, you know, there was a good portion of uninstructed voters. I think it was roughly twice the margin that Joe Biden actually won the state by back in 2020. So that kind of message could rear its head at the convention.
Well, speaking of that, you mentioned protests. I know Chicago police are preparing for protests that are already planned. They're expecting tens of thousands of protesters in a variety of ways. What do we know about, we mentioned the Israel-Hamas people who are unhappy with that issue. Are there other groups that we anticipate will be protesting?
Yeah, well, what we saw at the RNC was basically people coming out with for every issue under the sun. You know, I would suspect we'll see folks protesting, concerned about climate change, about abortion rights, but it's a safe bet, I think, that the most strident will be on the situation in Gaza. And it might be a little on the nose, given the history of protests at DNCs in Chicago, thinking back to 1968. But, you know, if there was going to be one of the two major party conventions that we're going to have a pretty significant conflict between law enforcement and protesters, it definitely was always going to be the DNC.
That issue of what's happening in Gaza has been very divisive within the Democratic Party. Do you think that the Harris-Walz campaign will be able to bring some unity around that issue at convention?
That's a really good question, and that's definitely something I'll be watching for going into the convention. It's kind of how they distinguish themselves from Joe Biden and the way he's handled the Israel-Hamas conflict, or war, I should say. It's more than a conflict now. But I think she'll be able to, I don't know if she'll be able to entirely convince that in that whole, you know, delegation of people who are focused on the Israel-Hamas war and are on the side of Palestinians, but I do think she'll have a better chance at convincing at least some of them, maybe even enough to, you know, win in November, that she will be able to handle that war better than Joe Biden has.
Well, and that's the thing that enthusiasm really helps you with, because you know, she's a part of the Biden administration, too, but a lot of the people who were very critical of President Biden, not all of them, a good chunk of them remain critical of the ticket, but some of them have really fallen into line.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really kind of that groundswell can make up for a lot of sins, I think, in the minds of some.
Yeah, certainly. And I think the fact that we've seen the Democratic Party, you know, basically drop its front-runner incumbent candidate and decide to change it up is a sign to voters that the Democratic Party is willing to change at least somewhat, maybe not.
We're listening to you.
Right, exactly. Okay. So that, I think, could be a sign of hope to some of those voters.
You mentioned the issue of abortion, which has been a leading issue or winning issue for Democrats in many ways since Roe was overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court back in 2022. Do we anticipate that issue to have the same level of focus at this convention?
I would expect to hear about it a lot. If it's anything like the messaging that the Harris campaign has had in Wisconsin and that, you know, candidates up and down the ballot, Democratic candidates have had here and in states across the country, they see it as a winning issue. They think that that really is what powered them to success in the 2022 midterms, and see no real reason to steer away from it. There are some issues where people want to see Democrats maybe moderate a bit, some wings of the party. Abortion does not really seem to be one of them, and that's really, I think, given some of the anxiety about the economy, about immigration, you know, abortion is one of the issues I think Democrats feel like is solidly in their corner.
You know, something else that's unique about this convention is the role of social media. And on the Democratic Convention website, they talk about how this is the first time that they're credentialing and providing access to content creators in the same way they do to legacy journalists like yourselves. How do you expect that to change coverage?
It could be very interesting, I will say.
What is a content creator, for those of us who need information?
Well, I think content creator is a very vague term, dependent on what industry you work in. There's a lot of different industries that have content creators, and it very much depends on where you work, what content you're actually creating. But, you know, say for, like, the traditional social media platforms like Instagram, TikTok, well, TikTok for a little while longer at least, we'll see. A lot of the content creators on those platforms seem to be more on the kind of PR side of things than objective journalism. So it might be a good chance for the Democratic Party to kind of really drive home some of the PR work that they're doing and make it, you know, really go wild on social media, which will definitely resonate with a lot of younger voters who are pretty much permanently attached to social media.
Well, and it sounds kind of silly, but I mean, that's where some of the momentum for Harris has come from thus far. It's these memes, it's, you know,
TikTok.
Her saying seemingly silly things, but it's going viral on TikTok. And it's not where I am, but it's where a lot of younger voters are, Gen Z folks, and that does move the needle, I think, at the end of the day.
Convention planners also say they'll be streaming across YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram throughout the convention. I've heard that they're making speeches shorter and spicier. It seems. Do you think that's a tip, a really targeted outreach to younger voters?
Yeah, I think so. It's searching for these viral moments, these little snippets of video that will be replayed over and over because, I mean, most people, we're nerds, but, you know, we're going to sit down and watch, you know, wall-to-wall coverage or close to it. Most people aren't. They're going to see, you know, a 30-second clip on their Twitter feed, and that will be the entirety of what they see, and Democrats really want to make sure that that 30-second clip is something that wins them over.
Talking about other groups that we might see outreach to, unions, Teamsters President Sean O'Brien made some news during the Republican National Convention when he spoke to that convention. First time a major union leader spoke to the RNC. What do we anticipate the Democrats' message will be to unions?
I think they're going to, you know, try and win unions back, honestly. And I think what Sean is really doing is trying to kind of play the parties to see, like, you know, which one is going to give me what I want, and I'm going to throw my power around because unions are a very large force in the United States. So if you can kind of reverse the roles in Sean's role of making sure that the party actually does what you want the party to do instead of the party telling you, hey, you know, unions are our people, I think he's, you know, he's doing his job, basically. But I think, Democrats will really try to bring unions back into the fold largely and remind them, like, you know, hey, we support unions, while Republicans, especially in the state of Wisconsin, have done a lot of work to kind of erode union power. We saw Act 10, you know, during Governor Scott Walker's era, Republican governor, and a lot of groups have been complaining about the Act 10 for a long time. So I think, Democrats are definitely going to try to drive home that unions are, they are very pro-union.
Former President Trump, after the convention, made some comments about union busting in a conversation with Elon Musk on X, and there was some reaction to that. How important is the union vote to either party in this election?
Yeah, very important, because I think in the last two elections in 2016, 2020, you saw a divide where union leaders, you know, were still very much following where they've been traditionally, which is with the Democrats. But the rank and file has maybe migrated a little bit more towards the Republicans, at least towards President Trump. And, you know, comments like he made on the Twitter Spaces forum and things like that are going to be what they try to use to win those, you know, shepherd those folks back into the fold, as Adam was saying.
What do we know about Republican counter-programming during the convention or GOP messaging? What might we expect to hear from them as this convention is happening?
That's also a really good question. We did see a lot of counter-programming at the RNC. I don't know exactly how effective it was. A lot of them were kind of mobile billboards in vans, which weren't able to really get through the security perimeter. So if you weren't, if you were inside of the RNC, you wouldn't have seen any of that counter-messaging. So it might be actually easier for Republicans to do some counter-messaging, considering the DNC is between two different security perimeters, so you'll have to walk between the two, basically, in order to attend the entire convention. So we'll probably see some more, you know, electronic billboards driving around that are basically just big box trucks with screens on the side of them, and they'll be displaying inflammatory messages that you know, voters are all too familiar with. So,
what's at stake overall for Democrats with this convention?
Well, I think we were talking about it earlier. It's not necessarily the question of generating enthusiasm, but maintaining it. And if you're looking to add a little jet fuel to the enthusiasm fire that started when Biden stepped aside, this is kind of a good way to do it. You know, it's a week-long PSA for how great your party is. And if they can hit the right notes, I think their thinking goes that will help, you know, flow into the fall when things really get intense and the finish line's in sight.
What do you think? Same?
Yeah, I think it's kind of hard to see how they would drive up enthusiasm more than it is right now. But I think the main goal is going to be maintaining that enthusiasm through the duration of the rest of the race.
Now, I know that neither of you will actually be in Chicago, but you'll be watching the convention roll out. What's your favorite way to watch? Do you have a beverage, some snacks? You got a text group going, or?
Yeah, well, it's Wisconsin, so you have to have a beverage while watching. But
or multiple.
Yeah. I mean, I would say to folks out there watching, like, a good way to keep track of things is to follow Wisconsin media who are covering it either on the ground or like Adam and I, you know, keeping track by as we deluge the delegates with texts and phone calls, because that way you can kind of connect this big event that is a little can be a little hard to get your arms around at times to Wisconsin and to the issues that matter to you. So maybe this is a little bit of a shameless plug, but I think Wisconsin media is a great way to keep track of what's going on.
Yeah, and you can actually check both of us out on Madison.com because we have the same URL website.
Nice.
And your X handles, your Twitter handles are up on the screen for our viewers, but go to Madison.com and find your work throughout the week.
Yeah, you can find both Cap Times and State Journal at Madison.com.
So. All right, and how do you like to watch the convention?
Well, personally, I love black coffee, so I'll definitely have a black coffee, multiple black coffees throughout the day covering that, and then probably later in the night I'll switch to Miller High Life's, but because I'm from Milwaukee and that's our one of our favorite beers out there, for at least for dive bars. But I have created basically a Excel spreadsheet of all of the Wisconsin delegate names, some of the issues they might be worth calling on, and then their phone numbers and email contacts. So yeah, I'll be bothering delegates all the time. I'll be calling Mark Pocan as much as I can, trying to get a beat on, you know, what's going on at the convention, what the Wisconsin delegates are seeing, what they're hearing, who they're talking to, what their favorite moments are, stuff like that. And I will be for sure reporting it. I don't tweet too much, honestly, but yeah, if you want to check out our website, Madison.com. We also have a newspaper. You can read that.
What a concept, right?
All right. Oh, who needs those content creators when we have both of you? All right. Madison.com, reminder to our viewers. Also, you can find our work from Wisconsin Eye. We will be, with our partnership with WisPolitics.com, we'll be bringing you campaign interviews, posting those throughout the week. You can find all of this information on our campaign page. So make sure you check that out, along with the work of these two journalists on Madison.com. Thank you both for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
Nicolet Bank is honored to support all who strive to make communities great. You have been watching a production of Wisconsin Eye, your unfiltered window into legislative deliberations and public policy programming. where our mission is to provide Wisconsinites an opportunity to access the legislative process and connect with conversations that inform our citizenry. Please consider supporting our mission, and thank you for watching. Wisconsin Eye, policy made public.